The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you're listening, I bet you've tried changing something big about yourself at some point, maybe a new diet, that super early morning routine, or finally learning that language.
Oh, definitely. We all jump into those huge self-improvement projects full of energy.
And, well, if you're anything like me, you know how it often goes.
Right. Spectacular flame out maybe 2 weeks in when real life bumps up against the plan.
Exactly. And that feeling, that frustration, is precisely where Olga Kazan starts in her fantastic book, Me But Better, The Science of Learning to Work with Your Personality.
It really tackles that core problem head on. It asks, okay, why do most of these efforts fail? And crucially, it offers this really smart, personalized, evidence-backed way forward.
Yeah, so today we're diving deep into her work. Because it's not just about why we fail, it actually gives you a framework. A strategy for making positive changes stick, but, and this is key, without trying to fundamentally rewire who you are.
Mm-hmm. Our goal here is pretty straightforward. Distill that framework so you walk away with practical ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Things you can actually use. Tailored to how you work. It's about becoming, you know, a better version of yourself, not some failed copy of a self-help guru.
Okay, so before we get into the how, let's talk about the who. Who is Olga Kazan?
Sure. She's a really respected staff writer at The Atlantic. She covers health, gender, social science, complex stuff.
And importantly, she's not coming at this as like a motivational guru selling a system.
Not at all. That's what's so refreshing. She approaches self-improvement like an investigative journalist. Rigorously.
So all the advice is grounded in actual research.
Absolutely. Peer-reviewed studies, behavioral economics, psychology, neuroscience. If there isn't solid science behind a strategy, she basically tosses it.
I think that's a huge part of the appeal. You know, in this world just flooded with self-help opinions, she brings data.
Exactly. But what makes it really distinctive and I think really relatable is her own personal involvement.
Ah, right. The human guinea pig aspect.
Yeah. She frames the whole thing around her own experiments. She talks very openly about struggling with shyness, with introversion, and feeling like it held her back.
So she used herself to test these theories.
Pretty much. Documenting the awkwardness, the things that didn't work, the small wins. That vulnerability makes you trust her immediately.
Okay, let's unpack the core idea then, the central thesis that holds all this research together.
At its heart, the book argues that real sustainable change doesn't come from those rigid one-size-fits-all plans.
Mm.
It comes from really understanding your own psychological makeup, your personality, and then working with it, not against it.
Working with it, that feels different.
It is, and it directly challenges that old idea of a fixed self, you know, that I am who I am and I can't change. Kazan shows personality is way more dynamic than we think.
And the key insight driving that is?
It's this powerful idea from behavioral science.
Mm.
Identity follows action.
Identity follows action. Okay, break that down a bit more. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means you don't sit around waiting to feel motivated or inspired. Like if you want to be more disciplined, you don't wait until you suddenly feel like a disciplined person.
Right.
You start acting disciplined. You organize consistently, maybe just small things at first. And gradually, that identity of being a disciplined person actually grows out of the behavior. The action shapes the identity.
Not the other way around. I love that. So the book is partly a critique of the, let's say, messy self-improvement world, but it's also a practical guide.
Exactly. And she structures it using a really solid model, the big five personality traits that psychologists use. Ocean, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and eroticism.
Okay, ocean. And the goal isn't to, like, flip your personality entirely.
No, definitely not a personality transplant. It's about functional improvement, getting better in specific areas that matter to you.
So not trying to force an introvert into being the life of the party.
Precisely. But maybe giving that introvert the tools to turn up their extroverted behaviors dial when, say, they need to network for their job. It's about flexibility.
Let's dig into those big five then, starting with the one that kicked off her own journey. Extroversion, assertiveness, positive feelings, needing social interaction.
Right. And Kazan, being introverted, wanted to get better at the social side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Her experiments here are perfect examples of that act as if principle we mentioned.
What does she actually do?
Well, she joined an improv comedy class.
Wow. Okay. That sounds like an introvert's nightmare.
Right. And she made herself start conversations with strangers. She found that, yeah, it's uncomfortable at first, but the behavior really does lead the feeling. By acting more socially adept, consistently, you actually build that skill. It gets easier.
So it's not about suddenly loving huge parties, maybe?
Not necessarily. It's about having the option, the skill, to be more outgoing when it benefits you. Situational flexibility. Got it.
Okay, next up, neuroticism. This is the trait linked to negative emotions, anxiety, worry.
And the goal here is boosting emotional stability, making those feelings less overwhelming.
And the main tool she highlights for this, the one with the most evidence.
That would definitely be cognitive behavioral therapy.
CBT.
Right, CBT.
Yeah.
How does that work in this context?
Gazan explains it as a process for dealing with those negative automatic thoughts. You know, the critical or fearful thoughts that just seem to pop into your head. Psychologists call them cognitive distortions.
Okay, so you learn to catch those thoughts.
Exactly. You identify them, then you challenge them. Like, you look for actual evidence. Is that fear really justified? And then you work on reframing the thought into something more realistic or balanced.
Can you give a quick example, like a common distortion?
Sure. A big one is catastrophizing, assuming the absolute worst outcome. You send an email, don't hear back immediately, and your brain jumps to, they hate me, I'm fired.
Huh, yeah, I think we've all been there. Right. So CBT teaches you to pause and ask, okay, what's the evidence my boss hates my presentation? Or could they just be busy? Is there another explanation? It turns that catastrophic fear into just a hypothesis you can check.
That makes sense. It disrupts the spiral.
Precisely. And she also mentions things like mindfulness, gratitude journaling, tools rooted in neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to actually rewire itself, moving away from default worry patterns.
Okay, moving on to conscientiousness, discipline, organization, being reliable. She points out this one correlates really strongly with success in life.
It does. But the good news is, improving here isn't about just gritting your teeth and forcing yourself with sheer willpower.
Oh, thank goodness. So what's the alternative?
It's much more about building smart systems. Because, as we'll touch on later, willpower, it's a finite resource. It runs out.
So you use systems that don't rely on it.
Exactly. Two big strategies she focuses on are environmental design and habit formation.
Environmental design, like setting up your space.
Sort of. It's making the good choice the easy choice, the path of least resistance. So if you want to eat healthier, maybe you pre-chop veggies and put them right at eye level in the fridge.
So you see them first? Makes sense.
You're designing your environment to nudge you towards success. And then there's habit formation, specifically using micro steps.
Micro steps. Tiny goals.
Yeah, ridiculously tiny. Instead of write a book chapter, maybe your goal is write one sentence or put on running shoes. That small step bypasses the brain's resistance to starting something big. It overcomes inertia.
That feels much more doable. Okay, let's tackle agreeableness. This one's tricky, right? Kindness and cooperation are great, but...
But high agreeableness can also mean you avoid conflict at all costs, struggle to set boundaries, maybe don't advocate for yourself effectively. It's a double-edged sword.
So the goal isn't to become less kind.
Definitely not. It's about achieving situational agreeableness, developing the wisdom and maybe the courage to know when it's necessary to push back or stand your ground, even if it feels uncomfortable.
How do you practice that, especially if you're naturally very agreeable?
She suggests practical things, like learning scripts for saying no, politely but firmly, without feeling like you need a long, guilt-ridden excuse.
Okay.
And a key mental trick, especially at work, like in salary talks or pushing back on deadlines, is separating the task from the person. Highly agreeable people often feel like rejecting a request is rejecting the person.
I see that.
Kazan helps you reframe it. You're not rejecting them. You're just disagreeing with the terms or the request. That mental separation makes self-advocacy way less threatening.
That's a really useful distinction. Okay, last one of the big five. Openness to experience. Creativity, curiosity, liking new things. This one feels a bit more innate. Can you actually change it much?
Well, it does have a strong genetic link, but Kazan argues, yes, you can absolutely cultivate it intentionally. The strategies are all about boosting cognitive flexibility.
Cognitive flexibility, like making your brain more adaptable.
Exactly. It's about forcing your brain to grapple with unfamiliar information, connect different ideas. It's not just doing new things. It's the mental workout involved.
So things like traveling somewhere really different, learning a language, even reading books way outside your usual genre.
Yep. Those aren't just fun distractions. They're exercises for your brain. They inject novelty, force new connections.
And I guess the opposite is true. If you only consume stuff that confirms what you already think,
your cognitive flexibility can kind of atrophy. So actively seeking out different, maybe even challenging perspectives keeps your thinking sharp and, well, open.
Okay, let's zoom out. If we look across all these traits, what are the big overarching themes, the core messages?
I think the number one takeaway, and maybe her biggest challenge to the standard self-help industry, is personalization over prescription.
Right. No single system works for everyone.
Exactly. A strategy has to fit your personality, your situation, your values. What works wonders for a super conscientious person might totally flop for someone lower on that scale. You have to become like a scientist observing your own life.
Which ties into the next theme, doesn't it? Working with, not against, your nature.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that trying to fundamentally change core traits, like deep introversion or a natural tendency towards caution, is probably futile and exhausting.
Yeah, it creates so much internal resistance.
So success comes from finding clever ways to leverage your strengths and work around your limitations. Hate the gym, don't force it. Find a way to move your body that you actually maybe kind of enjoy.
Makes sense. And central to that is theme number three.
The limits of willpower. This is huge. Kazan really emphasizes that willpower isn't about moral strength. It's a limited resource. Like a phone battery, it drains.
So relying on it for tough things like diet, exercise, saving money.
It's basically setting yourself up to fail eventually. The smarter approach, going back to conscientiousness, is building systems and designing your environment so you don't need as much willpower in the first place.
Right. Automate the good choices. And the final theme feels really important, especially when things don't go perfectly.
Yes. Theme four. Self-compassion is a driver of success. This counters that harsh inner critic many of us have. Kazan shows that beating yourself up after a setback actually hinders progress.
How so?
Well, if every slip-up leads to intense self-criticism, you're just more likely to give up entirely. Self-compassion isn't about letting yourself off the hook. It's about resilience. It lets you see failures as just data. Okay, that approach didn't work. What can I try next? Mm-hmm. And bounce back faster. It's self-preservation, really.
The book really does have some fantastic lines that just crystallize these ideas.
Totally. They stick with you, like the one summarizing the whole willpower issue.
Oh, yeah. The problem isn't that we lack willpower, it's that we're relying on it in the first place. Just hearing that shifts the whole feeling from personal failing to, like, a design problem.
Exactly. And then there's the one about acceptance. Your personality isn't a bug to be fixed, it's a feature to be leveraged.
Mm-hmm. That's so empowering. Stop fighting the parts you can't change and figure out how to work with them.
And maybe my favorite, capturing the whole incremental approach. Small experiments compound into big transformations, but big experiments usually compound into big failures.
Yes. It's all about those sustainable micro steps, not the dramatic, impossible leaps.
Okay, so how do we make this super practical? Let's apply this experimental mindset. Say you struggle with procrastination at work, maybe low conscientiousness kicking in.
Right, so instead of just saying, I'll be more disciplined, you use that habit stacking idea.
Exactly. Make it specific, tie it to something you already do. Like, after I pour my first cup of coffee, that's the cue, I will open my most important work document and work on it for just 15 minutes.
15 minutes, the micro step. You're removing the need to feel motivated first.
Precisely. Or think about mental well-being. If you're higher in neuroticism, prone to anxiety in relationships, your partner doesn't text back instantly, and your mind starts racing towards disaster scenarios.
You use the CBT question.
Right then and there. What's the evidence for this fear? What's a more likely alternative explanation? That simple step can interrupt the anxiety spiral and bring in some rational thought.
And for something like finances, environmental design seems key.
Totally. Don't rely on having amazing discipline on payday. Mm-hmm. Set up an automatic transfer to your savings account that happens the moment your paycheck lands.
The money moves before you can even think about spending it.
Yep. You've designed your financial environment to make the smart choice effortless. It takes willpower out of the equation.
I think the biggest shift, the most surprising thing for me reading this, is that realization you mentioned earlier. All those failed diets, abandoned gym memberships, half-finished projects. Maybe they weren't signs of weak character.
Mm-hmm. They were probably just strategy mismatches. Trying to use a technique that didn't align with your underlying personality traits.
It really lifts a weight, doesn't it? It reframes failure as data. The book basically empowers you to become a better experimenter in your own life, tweaking things until you find what clicks for you instead of just blaming yourself.
Absolutely. And for me, the final reflection is just how empowering it is to realize that change is possible, but it looks different than we often imagine. It's not one big dramatic moment.
Right.
We really are the authors of our own character arc. But that story unfolds through this slow, steady accumulation of small, intentional choices day after day. It feels like a much more mature and, frankly, achievable way to think about growth.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.